They're off.
This week I'm going to be racing the Skedaddle in Canterbury, and I'm going to be wearing my big Bronco race vest, which I love and I've raved about for months. If you don't know Ultra Spire, check him out, www.ultraspire.nz. Bryce Thatcher's been making the most incredible packs for the last 40 something years, and my god, I am stoked. I've got a ton of compulsory kit to wear, and not to wear, hopefully to carry, and it's all fitting in there, plus everything I need: race nutrition, bottles, the lot. So yeah, check them out, www.ultraspire.nz, and my favorite, the big Bronco.
Currans, c-u-r-r-a-n-z, by the way, the little New Zealand black currants, their ace. Head along to Currans, as I said, c-u-r-r-a-n-z.co.nz, to read up on the science behind these little pills that help with the recovery. And if you use the code DIRTCHURCH, you get 20% off your first order of Currans 30s. Give it a crack.
Did you know, Eugene, we are so close to actually being inside Further Faster that I can taste it. I can taste the down jackets, the kayaks. I can taste the coffee. I can taste the bouldering chalk. I can taste all of it. I can smell it. I've been visualizing it. The best independently owned outdoor store in the known universe, 57A Bugin Street, Sydenham, Otutahi, Christchurch, or hit them up at furtherfaster.co.nz. So excited.
Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio. Episode 275, Dirt Church Radio. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I am Eugene Bingham. Tēnā koutou katoa. We made it, and we've made it for a bonus episode. Right. We didn't want you to miss out on this, so we thought we'd just get it straight to you. I caught up with Jenny and Jeff Feeling, the founders of Tailwind. They were in Aotearoa for the Faultline Ultra on the weekend just gone, and they headed off to ride the Old Ghost Road as well. They live in the mountain town of Durango, Colorado, where they've made a deliberate decision to grow and keep their business. And we talk about life in a small town and why it's important for them to be part of that community. We talk about the origins of Tailwind, which is a bit of a famous story about Jeff having a bad old time at Leadville Trail 100 mountain bike race. We also talk about the science of race nutrition, the best and worst flavours, that second question coming courtesy of Matt, and that time Jeff almost had the whole of Chicago airport shut down because of the bunch of white powder he was carrying. We've all feared that. They were delightful and sweet to chat with, and since they're in the country, we wanted to share it with you ASAP, so please enjoy. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you
for having us. Yeah. We're excited.
This is your first time down here, is it?
It is.
Yeah, never been.
It is. I mean, I think we're just blown away how beautiful it is. And I think with, you know, we've only been in Wellington, but the access to the trails is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, for being in a city, and you can be, you know, you can get to a trail in 10 minutes, no matter kind of where you are, right?
And the people are just so welcoming and so nice. It's been great.
It feels like a kindred spirit sort of mm-hmm. place to Colorado because of how people are just really into the outdoors and value the nature and the wildlife and the environment too.
It certainly is special down there. And I want to ask you about Durango as well, because I sort of conjured an idea in my mind, but I'd love to hear a bit of a description from you. But first of all, so you've got the Faultline Ultra you're there for, but you're also heading off to do some mountain biking, I understand.
Yeah, we're going to do the Old Ghost Trail, which that one's famous even in the U.S.
Is it?
So, you know, we've seen some of the magazine spreads and photographs of it, and it looks just spectacular. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And I brought booties just in case, because I also saw the potential for snow.
Yeah.
However, I will say that one of the things that's been interesting about getting ready for Faultline is that it's been winter in Colorado. So we've actually done a little bit of training in the snow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I think it would pay to be prepared on the Old Ghost in April, but hopefully you get good weather. Yeah. And yeah, it's going to be that'll be an amazing ride. Are you spending any more time down south?
I don't know. We're debating about that. We have a few days after the end of that, so we're trying to decide where to go. So if you have any tips,
yeah. All right. I'll think of some for you. There's just so much, but like I mentioned Durango, and I've got this idea in my head, but can you perhaps describe the town for me or the city for me and what it's like and sort of the environment around it?
Sure. Yeah. Jenny, do you want to?
Yeah. So Durango, it straddles two areas. So if you head to the north, you're going to find yourself in the mountains. We're at the base of the San Juan Mountains, which is the youngest range in the Rocky Mountains. So because of that, they're very jagged and just absolutely gorgeous. And quite a few of your listeners may be familiar with the Hard Rock 100. And so that takes place in that same range. So it starts in Silverton and basically is a circular course as it goes through Telluride and Ouray and ends in Silverton. Mm-hmm. So that's our neighbor. They're our neighbors. And then if you go further south, then you're in the high desert. So you could go mountain biking down there the same day that you go skiing in the morning. So you can go skiing in the morning and then mountain biking in the afternoon. So that's great. And then there's a river, the Animas River, which winds through Durango. If you start off at the headwaters, which are in Silverton, you can have some class 4, class 5 rapids. And then you end up down in Durango and it just continues on. So we feel very fortunate. And as Jeff said, kind of kindred souls in the sense that the town really values the outdoors and everything that it brings to the community. So, and contributes to the culture of the community as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's been a great place. We moved there probably 26 years ago, and we've raised our kids in Durango. You know, one of the things that's kind of cool is that by having all those outdoor experiences and growing up that way, they have this, you know, kids from Durango just have this innate sense of confidence in their ability to survive in the outdoors and kind of a base level of confidence in anything, you know, any kind of outdoor activity. So it's kind of, they're kind of grounded in a way that I think this may be different than people who grow up in cities and don't have necessarily the access to that. And as Jenny said, it's also like southeast Utah is a couple hours away from us. So the Arches, Canyonlands, we love the Bears Ears area, which is a very important area for the native tribes in the Southwest, and also has ruins from the ancestral Puebloans and canyon country. It's just, there's endless amounts of places to explore. So it's a very cool place to be. And I think also because it's kind of isolated, everybody helps each other. And you have this kind of pretty tight knit community. So, from the standpoint of growing a business, we've really benefited a lot from just, other businesses in the area that have helped us out and helped us grow. So it's been fantastic.
I mean, I think I could sum up just what you've said as outdoors paradise.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Would that be fair? Yeah. And the other thing that always strikes me about where you live is it's not just about trail running or mountain biking. There are so many other different ways of getting out in the outdoors, aren't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one day where we were sitting around after a day of skiing, and there was a group of 8 of us, and we're like, oh gosh, we could come up with this really awesome race where we link together all these different sports. And I think we came up with between 36 to 40 different sports.
Yeah, around 40 sports you could probably pull off in a day.
Yeah, so you could start off downhill skiing and switch to cross country.
You've got snowshoe,
then you've got your canoeing and your kayaking. I mean, so the whole
smorgasbord. Fat biking and just work your way downhill and, you know, you end up in the desert, right?
Yeah.
So Yeah, yeah, very much so. And that's been a huge thing for us in training for the fault line is, you know, well, we couldn't always get out and get out on our mountain bikes, but definitely did a lot of skate skiing and some snowshoeing and some fat biking on the snow, you know, just a little bit of everything, trying to throw it in there and get ready for this.
Brilliant, brilliant. And Tarango, you mentioned too, in terms of business, you made a decision to be sort of committed to it and it for it to be part of Tailwind.
Yeah, very much so. I think for us, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do from the start was to build a community asset, and that also includes like the communities that we serve, the running community, the cycling community, the outdoors in general, but also very specifically our local community. And because it is kind of a, you know, a mountain town and relatively far away from some of the population centers, it's economically difficult to make it there. And so to be able to create jobs like we have by manufacturing all of our products in Durango, so be able to create some good, solid, like year-round positions, that's been really gratifying because so many people have struggled to make it and then maybe like can stay, but then have to leave. And so to see our employees be able to put down roots in the community, start families, buy houses and stay, like that's really like, you can't even build a community if you don't have those basics covered. Right. So, being able to contribute to that has been really meaningful for us. And it's just one of the ways that we feel like it's, I think for both of us, like we never really kind of went into business to just because we love doing business. It's about what that business can do and how we can help people, including ourselves and our community. So,
we commonly refer to it as building a community asset. So that it benefits the community at large. So just not just our company. And there have been loads of studies that have been done that show that, you know, every dollar that stays within your community, it has this multiplier effect. So the more that we can do that, the more it benefits the community. Mm-hmm. And we also extend that to like the local stores, like in every community throughout the world. Like if you end up buying at your local store, that's much more impactful for you and your community. So just trying to tie it all together.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Yeah. And so important. And I mean, I guess there would have been points where it would have been cheaper and, you know, more efficient and whatever to pack up and go to a bigger center or to
absolutely.
Know, go overseas or something. But yeah.
We're completely self-funded. So we've never accepted outside monies. And one of the primary reasons is that we know they'd probably come in and they'd say,
be like, what are you guys doing?
What are you doing? You've got to move your manufacturing, go to a co-manufacturer, stop writing the names on the bag, stop writing those notes. So, we like to be.
Yeah, there are trade-offs involved, but I would also say there's real benefits involved too. So, you know, one of those local shops gave us our start they invited us in to kind of talk with their team about what we were doing. And at the end of it, the owner said, hey, I'll buy $400 worth of stuff. And so we looked at each other and we're like, okay, I guess we need to go find some packaging and start putting this in bags and then offered to exhibit it at the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic, which is a big race that's hosted in Durango every Memorial Day. And that was our kickoff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it goes both ways,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It's so important. I've heard that you met mountain biking in Seattle. Is that right? And is that where you both grew up? Or?
Yeah. Not grew up, but that's where we met. Okay. Yeah.
That's where we met. Yeah, we started mountain biking together. And then on the way to the mountain biking trails, we would pass the exit because we were so engrossed in conversation. So, but you also... You know, you probably know when you're doing events like this, there is no beauty, right? Like you were doing your farmer blows.
Yeah.
You're just sweating and gross, and particularly in Seattle.
You're covered with mud, right?
Covered with mud. So, very early on.
Yeah, it's a good way
This is who I am.
Good way to get to know every bit of it.
You can't hide much. And
we lived like a block away from each other mm-hmm. in Seattle by happenstance. So that worked out great. And mm-hmm. Just a funny story. Like the first official date we had, I'd been out canoeing in January and down a river north of Seattle that has a salmon run. So the eagles were lined up on like hundreds of them up on the river, which is just amazing. Came back and then I called Jenny and just asked if she would like to go grab a bite to eat because we were, you know, we lived so close to each other. And she was like, yes, that'd be great. And I didn't find out till years later she'd already eaten. that was our first official date.
Oh, wow.
A double dinner.
Yeah. It starts with nutrition. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
So what's pretty common in the United States is you move a lot from place to place. So I was born in New Jersey, then lived in Utah, Arizona, went to college in Michigan, and then Missouri, and then met Jeff in Washington State. So pretty much 6 years everywhere until we moved to Durango, where, like as Jeff said, we've been there for close to 26 years. So that's really where I would say I'm the most rooted. Mm-hmm. When we were looking at moving from Seattle, we made a list of the top 10 things that we love to do. And 9 out of the 10 things were outdoors oriented. So it made a lot of sense for us to move to Durango. And in fact, when we came through, some friends of Jeff from college, they said, well, be careful if you come for you may never leave. And they were right.
mm-hmm. And Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, and I grew up all over the place as well. I spent probably the biggest amount of time in the Denver and Colorado area. So then went to college and went to Seattle for work after that. That's then where we met. And but at the end, I think both of us have grown up around, we were always around mountains. So I think we're more mountain people. Mm. And that's what led us into Durango. Mm.
And were sports big things for both of you growing up, or just the outdoors in general?
I was a ballet dancer. So yeah, I know.
There
you go. So my aspirations were around ballet. And then when I graduated high school, you kind of make that decision of, are you good enough or are you not? I realized I wasn't good enough for where I wanted to be. And then I had this moment where I graduated from undergrad and I went on this bike trip with a friend, borrowed her sister's bike, and it opened up this whole new world for me. And then from there in St. Louis, I just started riding a lot with American Youth Hostels. They had a weekly ride and just fell in love with it. I just loved the freedom that it gave me, and learning how to change a flat tire was very empowering. And, met wonderful people, and just the mileage became bigger and bigger and bigger. And I just continued with it. And then mountain biking came along, and then Jeff, and here we are.
Yeah, and for me, I was always like doing some athletic thing, like playing different sports, or probably track was one of the ones that I put the most number of years into. And I was a little more of a sprinter. I'm kind of built more like a fast twitch muscle, which is maybe not the best for endurance, but I also was exposed to backpacking and skiing growing up in Colorado. So that was just, it's always been a part of me. And that was something that we did a lot of when we were in Seattle. Between we were either going mountain biking or driving out to go backpacking every weekend. So that was, I'd say we both got much more into mountain biking in Seattle. And after, but it also, you know, it was sort of, wasn't really a thing until I was in college. And actually, yeah, so you probably appreciate this. I used the money for I had for my my food plan to buy a mountain bike.
We've all been there.
And then I would just go around and, just have like lunch with a friend, with a different friend every day and mooch off of their meal plans. So
good plan.
That was kind of how I started getting into biking, was on the cheap.
So yeah, that sounds like a great plan. Now, the origin story of Tailwind and that famous video, Jeff, of you throwing up in the I guess I should call it trash can. We call it rubbish bin after the Leadville Trail 100. But so that's kind of, and it was that which should have inspired you to find the answer to the nutrition questions you were having. But Jenny, I've always been intrigued. You were crewing for him that day. What was he like during the day?
Wow. It was a measure of concern, because you could definitely see him deteriorate. But at the same time, Jeff has, I think this is true for anyone who's involved in endurance sports. The mental capacity is so important, right? So it's almost mind over matter, or your physicality. So you will push your way through. This is kind of how we're approaching the fault line. Like my motto is DFL before DNF. But yeah,
that should be on a t-shirt.
So the mental capacity to persevere, I think, loomed very large. So he was going to finish no matter what. So he crossed that finish line. I'm just, all of us are celebrating. And I'm sorry about that. So all of us were celebrating just, with his ability to finish. But certainly when he was coming through the aid stations, it was, deteriorating through the day, because he literally was running on fumes throughout the day. So that was what really started him on this road of trying to figure things out. Yeah. Because I think that the hard part is that his legs felt great. He felt he could go through another 100 miles, but his stomach was just shattered.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. And that's something that I'm sure lots of people have gone through. I know I've been and had those days as well, before you find the right thing. But I guess too, I've always been intrigued by, many endurance athletes go through that issue of what is the right nutrition for me? How can I do it? Not many of them actually start mixing things up in their own kitchen though. So what on earth gave you that idea?
Well, I think that, at the time, I think I certainly knew my personal pain. I don't think I knew how much that, other people had that. Like I think I just thought I messed it up, and I didn't realize that it was as common as it is for endurance athletes. So I was really just focused on trying to solve my own problem and not really thinking about it like as something that could be useful for other people to start with. And what led me to start making my own was that I mean, after that experience, I was like, okay, what I'm trying didn't work. So I'm just going to go try everything. Right. But it was kind of a shotgun approach. Like, I didn't know why I would choose one strategy over another. And I wasn't having good luck in just finding something that felt good. So then I was just thinking like, well, this is very inefficient. I don't even know what I'm after other than I want to feel better. So I wanted to educate myself and learn about how our bodies absorb fuel. And by doing so, what I was hoping to do was just be able to choose a better nutrition strategy. I didn't even actually think about making my own, but as I started to become more familiar with how this processes work in our bodies, I was starting to point out and like, oh, okay, I kind of understand now maybe why this isn't not working for me and why this is behaving this way. And as I started looking around, I really realized I didn't think any brand was actually matching how our bodies absorb fuel and minimizing the digestion component of it, which in the context of when you're racing or when you're working really hard, your blood is flowing away from your digestive system. So I was, I just, the really reason I started making it was because I didn't see anything that I thought was approaching it quite right. And so then I started to, experiment with making my own, to match that, how the body fuels. And that's what ultimately became our endurance fuel.
I think the idea of sort of aha or sort of golden breakthrough moments is a bit of a myth, isn't it? It's always like, yeah, you know, a series of discoveries and you inch towards something. But were there any particular moments for either of you that in that journey of discovery of what is the right recipe, what is the right answer in your research or in the making of the product initially? It wasn't even a product, was it? It was your own home brew. But was there any kind of moment where it was like, oh, okay, I get it. I need to do this, or that's why, you know, it needs to be this way.
Yeah, I think there were definitely some things that stood out for me. One was to understand the difference between the kind of calorie rate that you're expending during exercise and then your ability to absorb energy while you're exercising. And then there's a gap there. And your body kind of fills that with, it fills it partially with burning fat, and it fills it partially with burning your stored energy. But just understanding that those energy stores, the glycogen stores, are limited, and that your digestive ability is really derated during exercise. So it was that kind of moment where I was like, okay, well, I don't understand why a lot of products are using ingredients that take time and calories and energy to digest before it can come into your system, because you really actually just need to get as much in as you possibly can, as easily as you possibly can. So that was sort of one aha. I think the other thing that really stood out was that the studies on the use of protein during exercise really do not demonstrate a benefit to doing that. And in some cases, the protein molecules, which are pretty hard to digest or complex to digest, they can be a cause of GI distress. And in some cases, they can take more energy to break down for absorption than you actually derive out of them. And because the body's in a calorie deficit mode, it is trying to utilize that protein as energy rather than what it would be intended for, which would be rebuilding muscles. It's just that metabolically, those are two different things going on. During exercise, you're not rebuilding muscle. Your body's trying to get all the energy it can get to support that activity. So that was another sort of myth, I think, that was prevalent at the time. And I think that's since been much better understood, but that protein is really not a necessary component for during your exercise. Yeah. And so that was one way to kind of eliminate a really troublesome ingredient that was hard to digest.
And I think an epiphany for me, so my background is more in long distance cycling. And I had always thought, well, you're burning X number of calories, so that's how much you need to take in. So you need to basically replace what you're burning. And now, after going through, you know, this whole learning process, that really the gating factor is your absorption of calories, which is limited. It's about 200 to 300 calories an hour in general for humans. It's no wonder that I found myself on the side of the road with like my legs in the air and massaging my stomach, trying to get this 500 to 600 calories per hour that I was taking in via Hostess pies, you know, just trying to like, it was, you know, like, why are you not digesting? I need you to digest. So that was really an epiphany for me to know that you need to target that 200 to 300 calories per hour. For me, it's about 225 an hour. For Jeff, it's about 250 an hour. And that you also need water to digest it. So, for example, a lot of people run into problems with gels because they're taking 100-calorie gels, but it takes about 10 to 12 ounces of water to digest that gel. So I think because gels are pretty viscous, people forget about taking water with them, and they end up with stomach issues. So I think the breakthrough for Jeff when he was creating this was like, I really need to simplify it. mm-hmm. and put everything together, all the calories and electrolytes and hydration, so that you don't even need to think about it.
Yeah.
Like the bottle an hour and you're good. You're not going to overdo it on calories. You're not going to underdo it on electrolytes. And it's just all packaged together.
Yeah, I think that's also the other part of it, is that there's a scientific aspect of this and how it all works. But then there's also what you just know from being an endurance racer, is you understand, like, well, you know, when you're out there, you don't really want to have to keep track of like four different things. And your brain kind of goes south after, you know, several hours out there. And so you're thinking like, oh, did I take that pill 10 minutes ago, or was that an hour ago? And by the way, how many electrolyte pills should I be taking an hour? Like, nobody really knows that, right? Nor should they. I, from my point of view, I think like the best nutrition would be the nutrition that you just don't really notice. It just works. And so wanting to keep it very simple to use, so that that could result in a real consistent experience. And then also flavor and taste. That's the other part that comes from racing, is like, you know, if it's too sticky, too sweet, you know, you just can't take it. And as I was sort of, after I developed this and was sharing it with people and talking with people, like, that was one of the things I really heard from a lot of people, is like, I started out with this plan, I was doing this, and then I just couldn't take it anymore and I quit it. Well,
which is exactly what happened to me. So I was in denial that my husband had created this, right? And so we both went to, there's this race called the Silver Rush, and it's up in Leadville, and it's a 50 miler. And so he was riding with his Tailwind, but before it was called Tailwind. And then I took my old tried and true, or what I thought was my tried and true. And my stomach just shut down at the halfway point. I just could not stomach it. And similar to Jeff's experience at Leadville, I was coming back on fumes. And I was like, okay, I will try your stuff. And so a couple of weeks later, there was a century that I was doing, 100 miler, and I just ran on his Tailwind. And it was like a game changer for me. I was like, oh my gosh, you really have created something pretty awesome here. Okay. So,
Yeah.
Yeah. Simple.
I think as endurance athletes, or maybe just as human beings, we're always looking for complex answers sometimes. And it's like, we kind of ignore the easy in front of us because we think, oh, no, it can't be that. I know that from my own personal experience in a 100-mile race once, and I had my poor son dragging around aid stations at what we call a chili bin, you know, a cooler box of every single bit of nutrition known to humankind. And after, you know, I can't remember how far into the race it was, but I was just like, no, I'm done. I can't even look at any of that anymore. Yeah. And I got through mostly on Tailwind. You know, I was like, I'd had the Tailwind there all the whole time, but I guess in my head, I was like, oh, no, I need to be, you know, have variety and have all these different things. But
yeah
we kind of try and make things too difficult for ourselves sometimes.
And I think it is, you know, when we first started, it was a leap of faith, you know, for people to try Tailwind. And I remember telling people, well, you know, run with Tailwind and, you know, keep a gel in your back pocket, you know, just this kind of a security blanket, so to speak. And then we'd get feedback of like, oh my gosh, I didn't need the gel. I just ran with Tailwind. And I'm like, yeah. And it was just, and so our first, so we had this Trailblazer program, and we called them Trailblazers for two reasons. One's obviously because of our trail roots, but also because they were truly were trailblazers. They were taking that leap of faith that it was going to work, right? So they were kind of blazing that trail for others.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. The I mean, nutrition is an area where, and especially, well, no, all sorts of nutrition, but it's an area where you just get bombarded with all sorts of different fads and latest study says this and da-da-da. Honestly, if you listen to everything, you'd go mad, I think.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for you to keep up with all of that and to, you know, have you had to change the recipe at all over the years? You know, would people who consume Tailwind today recognize the Tailwind from the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question, and you're absolutely right. There's there's been a lot of progress on with scientific studies even since we began, and that is something that very much. I spent time keeping abreast of and really trying to not just to look at a single study in isolation, but to be looking at what are the areas of research and what are kind of all the studies pointing or telling us about that. And I think for the endurance tool, I think one thing we've learned is that there are, there are different nutritional needs for different types of efforts and for different situations. So like you'll see that kind of in our product line where we have the endurance fuel, which is still is very recognizable and really is very suitable for long duration where your pace is where your pace is a little more moderate compared with a super high output or super high intensity that might be characterized by a shorter duration. So it's very suitable for that. But we've also introduced a recovery mix because of how important the recovery component is, not just to, not just in terms of getting stronger, but also in terms of your training and being able to recover well enough to be able to then push your body, again in your training cycle. And then we have a hydration line that is just recognizing that, hey, not even for endurance athletes, you're not always doing an endurance workout, right? There are times when you don't need all that energy. There's another one that that we are going to be beta testing this summer, and so it'll be summer in the U.S. But and that is aimed at that high intensity and high output. And one of the balancing acts is, hey, for endurance, it's very important not to kind of push the envelope of what your body can absorb because your stomach has to stay settled. If your stomach goes wonky on you, then you can have a really bad day. But there are ways to train your gut to absorb a higher level of carbohydrates. But that is a process, and it is a little bit riskier because you're really trying to maximize the amount of carbohydrates you can absorb in a period of time. So that's a product that we're working on for that very high output. But again, like wouldn't be necessarily suitable for an ultra.
Mm. Yeah, it's that fine line between steady, being steady progress, which a lot of endurance athletes fall under, versus that really high intensity output. And it's that high intensity output that type of product is more suitable for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The recovery product, where did that come from? Like, were you, was that a suggestion from someone or was it, it was always in the plan or how did that come about?
Yeah, really, like a lot of our stuff, I mean, we listened to our customers a lot and we had just customers like, hey, where's your recovery? Where's your recovery? But at the same time, we didn't want to just we wanted to make sure that we could contribute something to the space and not be just a me too sort of product. So kind of the same process as endurance fuel to think about, like, we went down to the real basics of what do we need to recover and what's important to recovery, and then could we add something to what's out there? And we realized that one of the big misconceptions with recovery is around the timing of it. And a lot of people think that, like, hey, you need to really hit your body with a lot of protein right after a workout to rebuild muscles. And that the protein is really important, but the studies have actually shown that the timing of that isn't critical. It doesn't need to be immediately after a workout. And it's more important that you have periodic meals through a 24-hour period in which you're stimulating that muscle protein synthesis. But then the overlooked part of that is the glycogen storage recovery. So for most athletes, certainly any endurance, and even this is even true of very fat adapted athletes, that they'll be very depleted in their glycogen stores at the end of a workout. And that, it turns out like that is more time sensitive in the sense that you can rebuild those glycogen stores more quickly within the first 30 to 60 minutes after exercise than you can later on. And if you take advantage of that window, then you can really rapidly rebuild your glycogen. And that is a necessary component for rebuilding muscle. It kind of makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint. Rebuilding muscle takes energy, mm-hmm. takes resources. Your body's not going to be able to do that if it hasn't recovered its energy, right?
Mm. What I find really interesting about that is that people will focus on the protein and they'll go straight to the protein. Yeah. But because your body needs to replenish its glycogen stores first, it'll take that protein and convert it into energy to replenish your glycogen stores first. So this really expensive component of protein is actually just being turned into glucose because you're shortchanging yourself.
Right.
On the energy side. Yeah. So that was the first thing we did is we built enough, kind of the right amount and the right amount of carbohydrate and the right types of carbohydrates to maximize that glycogen replenishing rate. And then that sets you up to be able to rebuild the muscles.
Right.
That's another component there. The protein's not all created equal. There are complete components of protein and they're incomplete. The complete refers to the 9 essential amino acids, meaning that you have to eat them. You can't get them into your body in any other way. A complete protein is those 9 essential amino acids in the right ratio to each other. So we built a very complete protein by starting with an organic brown rice protein, which is fairly low amount of completion by itself, but then added the individual amino acids onto that to make it really complete. So we can use a smaller amount of protein and have a higher degree of completion. So it's about 3 times more complete protein per gram than a whey protein isolate.
Right.
And then that just means that the usable portion for the body for rebuilding muscles is very high, mm-hmm. and the waste part of it is very low. So that's another part that we approached with the recovery.
Yeah, I think what's been really interesting about this whole process is that, you know, Tailwind is, yes, we have the products, but the educational component of it is super important as well. To your point, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I think protein is a perfect example. So if you were to pick up a bag of protein, when you're looking at that protein number and how many grams are in there, that number reflects both the complete and incomplete protein. And what you really want to know is how much complete protein you're getting, because it's the complete protein that's going towards rebuilding your damaged muscle tissue, whereas the incomplete protein is you can either use it as fuel or then your kidneys need to deal with it as a nitrogen factor. But you really want to know what that complete protein component is. So if you're flipping over a bag and you see 20 grams of protein versus 10 grams, you say, oh, well, this is so much better.
But
yeah. It may not be.
But it's not that simple.
It's not that simple.
I didn't know that. There we go. Yeah, educating on the fly here as well. Thank you. But the other interesting thing I found about the recovery product, which I enjoy, it came along at a time when you were already up and running as a company, and I can understand in the early days of the endurance fuel how you were sort of testing on yourselves and you were your guinea pigs on your mates and so on. But I understand with the process of making the recovery product that you were using your kids as guinea pigs as well for getting the flavor right. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're friends.
Oh, that's funny. Was it one of our daughters that tipped you off of that?
Yeah.
No, our daughter, Sarah, yeah. She was a soccer player, and I would get her it was basically feeding her the recovery tests after every game or after every practice session. And there was one point, those amino acids are quite bitter, and I had not yet, we had not figured out how to mitigate that taste factor. And so I gave her some, and she takes one sip of that and she goes, I am not going to drink this and you can't make me. It was like, all right, scratch that recipe.
We've got feedback from our testing crew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another time when we were testing the endurance fuel and some new flavors, and we had them set out on our kitchen table. And it just so happened that our daughters had pulled up with their friends, and we just invited them all into the kitchen. I'm like, okay, taste away.
How about it?
And tell us what you like. So
brilliant. Oh, well, there you go. Yep, that's
there.
Yeah. Yeah. And at least they're going to be honest with you, aren't they? It's
like, yeah. Oh, yeah. They are.
Nothing more honest than your kids. Yeah. I imagine you've tried lots of different flavors over the years, but can you let us know what the worst one was?
Ooh, the worst one.
Maybe it didn't even get to market, but you thought you'd try something and.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably it didn't get to market. Hopefully, went through the child gate.
You know, it's funny. There's different applications. So I remember trying one flavor in our new Rapid Hydration, and it didn't work there at all. But then it ended up tasting delicious in our recovery mix. So these cross applications are kind of interesting. So.
Yeah, the different bases take flavors in a really different way.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to think of like what were the most disgusting ones. It actually took us quite a while to get the watermelon to work.
Right.
The first attempts at watermelon were just like it's a funny flavor because you have to have it just right. The concentration has to be just right. Because like watery watermelon is really not good. And then like overly concentrated is like a Jolly Roger. I don't know if you've got those here in New Zealand, those the hard candies that are.
Right.
Like just cloying and disgusting. We were finally able to get that one right, but it took a lot of going through watermelon flavors to figure out that one. We've tried various.
And have Courtney say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and have Courtney.
That's really right. You had the ultimate tester there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have tried some savory flavors too. Those don't really work. We tried like a chocolate for endurance fuel, and like it's like watery dirt. It was just terrible.
And yet it works so well as a recovery product. So there we go. Like you say,
it's recovery. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, that's what I was thinking of. We had a chocolate mint flavor for our rapid hydration, and it just did not translate well.
Whereas yeah, no, that was terrible.
We have it as a limited edition flavor in our recovery mix, and it's
delicious.
It's delicious.
Hits the spot. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked to Courtney back in 2018, I think it was, and Courtney Dubalter, in case not obvious, but, She was raving about you guys way back then. What an amazing athlete to have as part of your sort of not only that you sponsor, but as part of your crew. Really, she's in the house.
Yeah, she first tried us at Run Rabbit Run, which is a 100-miler in Colorado Springs, and she just had a great experience. And she and the race director at the time reached out to me and said, oh, there's this woman, Courtney, and she loves your product and you should sign her. And I'm like, well, that's great, because for us, it's really important that the athlete really love Tailwind and uses it, right? And so I think it was a couple months later, and she was on, I think it was after she had done the Moab 240, and she was on, and she was just raving about Tailwind. I'm like, wow, she actually really does like it. And so then I reached out, and I was like, listen, we think it's great, but we want you to take Tailwind. I'll give you, we'll send you some for like 6 months. You test it out. You make sure that it meets your expectations, that it really works for you. And that's really important to us. She tested it out for 6 months and came back and was like, yeah, I love it. And so we said, great. So that's how that relationship started. So, and she's just such a down to earth person. And yeah. She's the perfect, she really represents our core values as a brand. So it's just been a wonderful,
it's been a great match that way. It's just like she's such a good ambassador for the sport, mm-hmm. and how she, even though she's obviously amazing mm-hmm. athlete. She's just as interested in how the back of the Packers are doing and supporting supporting all the athletes through it. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's very important to us, like as a brand. And then just the partnership has been great to work with her on developing a flavor together.
I should say there's one moment that really stays with me, and it was after the Hard Rock 100. After she had won it, and she was sitting with a group of people, and she got up to grab something, and there was a girl who was about 14 or 15 and went up to her, and Courtney sat and talked to her for like 15 minutes and just gave her this encouragement. I was like, yes, like that is really what Tailwind also is about, is mm-hmm. just supporting everyone and being really inclusive. So it was just to me, that moment just stays seared in my memory.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, you said she's a great ambassador for the sport. She's also just a great ambassador for humankind, isn't she? I mean, yeah.
Right.
I don't like putting people up on pedestals, but you know, she's pretty special character, isn't she? Mm-hmm.
She is.
Yeah, which probably is part of why she's so good at what she does, because I doubt there's much that phases her, right?
She definitely has a deep pain cave.
Yeah.
Talks about that, and I wonder. I think about my own when I go into my own pain cave and how painful that is, and I think it's probably just scratching the surface for her. I don't know.
Yeah.
She must have just an extraordinary ability to dig down deep. You know,
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I was just thinking in terms of the other awkward moments that might have been around the flavors. The other thing that I've always thought with Tailwind is I've carried, you know, if I've got a big bag and I've put some of the powder into a small bag and carried it through an airport, have you ever had to bail anyone out from customs of like, no, honestly, this is my sports nutrition?
Yeah, that's happened. Actually, it happened to me. And Sarah, who I mentioned before, was playing soccer, coming back from a camp, and we were flying through Chicago. And little known fact, but those little x-ray machines, they're not just doing x-rays. They are also looking for energy signatures. And it turns out that a bag of Tailwind is basically fits the same energy signature as an Imodium nitrate bomb. And yep. So we got pulled aside, and then they sent out we got to meet the explosive specialists that worked for the Department of Homeland Security for all of Chicago O'Hare. And that took quite a while to get him there. And meanwhile, like, we're missing our flight and we're like, hey, can we just leave the stuff and go? And they're like, no. You need to stay. And so he finally gets there, and he straps on like the gloves and takes a vial and dips it into the gets a little thing of powder, pops it in this little handheld machine, and then he holds it over to me and he's like, is that what's in it? And I look at it, and he's got the complete breakdown of the formula instantly.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. It's like, yeah, that's it. And can I get one of those? He's like, no, I mean, these cost about 50,000 each, and they're made just for us. But yeah, at that very moment, I was like, well, if I had any illusions that somebody couldn't just knock our formula off in a day, well, they're gone now.
When I remember after that experience, I called the FAA and I, you know, explained the situation and talking about our customers are going through the airport. And is there anything that they can do, you know, like wrap it in a certain way so that it doesn't set off all these alarms? And they're like, ma'am, I can't tell you that.
We could tell you, but we'd have to kill you.
Yeah. So the answer is check it.
Yeah.
We're trying to take it in your carry-on.
And you might even want to. So like when we traveled here to New Zealand, we had a lot of Tailwind in our bag. And I just let the airport folks know. As we were checking our bag, I said, just to let you know, this contains sports nutrition. Primary ingredient is dextrose, which is very high energy dense. And so just FYI, that's what it is. So
yeah,
that's what we end up doing.
I mean, if it wasn't associated with an explosive, having so much energy would probably be worth putting in the marketing, wouldn't it? You know, like energy to shut down an airport. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. We'll make that.
I like that. That's a little better than Yeah, as much energy as a bomb.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, yeah, and having been covered in white powder at events and stuff, it's all just part and parcel of being an endurance athlete, I think, you know. Hopefully we can pull it off.
Part and parcel is if you have a bottle of Tailwind and you have a bottle of water and you accidentally take the bottle of Tailwind to cool yourself off.
Not recommended.
Do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, well, look, I should let you go, get going. I really, really appreciate your time. And it's so wonderful to see you down here, down under in Aotearoa, and all the best for not only Faultline, but the old ghost, and also any other adventures you get up to down here. And,
Thank you so much. I want to do just a huge shout out to Mark and the Tailwind crew here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's put together such an amazing community of people, and they have just been wonderful to us, showing us all around. And it's going to be really fun to be out in the course and just have a great time together.
Yeah. Yeah. We usually finish by asking our guests for what's their greatest run ever. But since you've got a biking and an other outdoors, interests as well, what's one moment in the outdoors, whether that be by foot, by bike, by skis or whatever, that, you know, is in your memory is like, wow, yeah, that was a great day.
Well, I think one of my favorite spots on Earth is the White Crack area on the White Rim Trail in Utah, and it's just, if you're not familiar with that, it's sort of a mid-level in Canyonland, so you still got a lot of just amazing rock formations underneath you, and then you also have cliffs and spires above you, and this is a spit of land that kind of goes out into overlooking the river, and it's just magical. If you ever get the chance to get out there and watch a sunset sitting on top of this just white sandstone, and then underneath that is red and yellows, and it's just a reminder of how small we are, and also how special of environment that is. It's just, I don't know. Beautiful. For me, I just
love that. Yeah, that sounds beautiful. Jenny?
Well, you probably saw me sit back like this.
Yeah.
I just had all these memories flutter in front of me. And we did a backpacking trip in the Grand Canyon with our two daughters, and it was their very first backpacking trip. And to see the joy on their faces as they were just skipping down the trail and on their first backpacking trip is definitely very memorable, to be able to share that with them. And now to see them, you know, in their 20s, still having the same enjoyment of the outdoors. That was super special. And you know, the Grand Canyon is just, you see pictures, but to actually be there, it's just unbelievable. It's awe-inspiring. You can't experience the grandeur through a photo. You actually have to be there. It's just awe-inspiring.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, what a great gift you've given your kids, and what great memories you've given all of you through that trip. That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, look, thank you so, so much. All the best, and see you again soon.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com, and don't forget to sign up to the new podcast and newsletter.
Join the crowd. Look, also, have a read of the Greatest Runs Ever on our website. Get inspired. Send us your own one. We'd love to hear from you. You can send them into us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Currens, and our Substack subscribers and the DCR Aid Station crew. Stay tuned for our show in 2 weeks when we have another great guest lined up, and check out the DCR Aid Station next week.
Hei konei, hei konei. Thanks, Rigby.